Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, coming to you delayed with the MCRIT podcast. Today, I am going to go with what is going to be for a long while the last of the non-clinical topics. I promise we will balance out all this philosophy, psychology, and mental mulling over with a good dose of clinical stuff. In fact, what I'm thinking of doing, what I'm going to do, what I'm going to try is eventually to work through every chapter of the Recess Crisis Manual. You know, the amazing reference I did with Dave Borshoff that is finally back available on the publisher's stockroom shelves. To work through each chapter of that, I think would be really cool, very similar to what the Internet Book of Critical Care is doing on the Farkas side of things at MCRIT. So I'm going to do a bunch of those to balance out this philosophical stuff, and then we'll see where we go to get through the whole book. But that's coming. And before we get into what we're going to discuss today, one other thing that's coming in less than 2 months is the Reanimate conference, the ED ECMO conference. I just want to friggin' sell out the tickets so I can stop worrying about this. So I have tickets available for paramedics, nurses, doctors, not many for the doctors. So if you're thinking you better get going, you better get going. And I'm going to send out in the mailing list this week a much bigger discount than I've offered in the past, simply because I want to be done with ticket sales. So check your email boxes for that if you're already signed up for the MCRIT mailing list. And if you're not, and you want to come to the Reanimate 7 conference in San Diego, best of ECMO, cardiac arrest management, etc., ECMO transport, all the good stuff, then go to reanimateconference.com. And again, join the MCRIT mailing list so you get the discount. But what are we going to be discussing today? Well, you and me, are not going to be discussing anything because you're not here, but I am in discussion with Andrew Davies. Andrew is an intensivist who, over the past year or so, has been putting out an insanely good podcast called Mastering Intensive Care, in which he takes some of the best people in critical care and then some, you know, half-assed, lackadaisical people like me, and he interviews them and talks about their way of managing their philosophy of patient care, how they go about their clinical service, how they live their lives outside of the hospital. I find them fascinating. Chances are, if you like MCRIT, you'd find them fascinating too. And Andrew decided, for whatever reason, to interview me at the last SMAC conference. And the interview's over an hour. There's some interesting discussion in there from my perspective. But I wanted to just take a piece of it and put it here on MCRIT for two reasons. Reason one is I think this particular thing, A, doesn't necessarily cast me in the best light, but I think it's a valuable thing to discuss. And I think maybe if you took a good hard look, you may turn out to agree with me. And then two is so that you can get a flavor of what goes on the Mastering Intensive Care podcast, and then go over and listen to, if you're interested in this interview, you can listen to the rest of mine, but that would be a waste of your time compared to what you could be listening to, which is the interviews Andrew does with people far smarter and better and, you know, nicer and all the good stuff than me. And so you'll find scores of them there at the Mastering Intensive Care podcast website, which you could find at masteringintensivecare.libsyn.com. Andrew, here's a plea. Get the Mastering Intensive Care domain name and just make that forward to masteringintensivecare.libsyn.com. But until then, folks, go to masteringintensivecare.libsyn.com.
My name is Andrew Davies, and I am an Australian intensivist from Frankston Hospital in Melbourne. The podcast is a series of conversations with guests I respect for what they do, so you, as an intensive care clinician, will hopefully be inspired and empowered to bring your best self to your intensive care unit. By listening to the show, I hope you'll glean insights to improve as a healthcare professional and as a human being to make the most valuable contribution to your patients' lives. I like to talk about compassionate care for our patients. How important do you see it as sitting down and holding the hand of the patient and telling them, you know, what's happening? And in a busy ICU like yours, I imagine it's even harder sometimes. Is that an important part of your role?
Oh, God. I knew this was going to come up. And because I've listened to your previous podcast, Andrew, and you've had some amazing guests, and all of them talk about the patient's humanity and treating them, retaining their personhood, and doing all of these incredibly compassionate moves in their intensive care units. And I think that's beautiful. But, and God, you know, I'm really opening myself up here to criticism, but I want to give a slightly different take. One of my friends, he said that there's two kinds of doctors in emergency medicine and critical care. There are patient-oriented doctors and disease-oriented doctors. And I mulled that over for a while, and I kind of saw what he was getting at. And I don't think that really explains it the way I want to explain it right now. I mean, that feels very much House of God. I don't know if you've ever read that book, but they talked about the non-patient care specialties like anesthesia and radiology. And yeah, maybe if you think about it superficially, you'd put emergency medicine and critical care in that, maybe you wouldn't. I mean, all your guests I said would think clearly would say, no, we're a patient care specialist. But I think that's looking at it slightly in the wrong lens. So let me try to explain this. In resuscitation in particular, I think there are people-oriented doctors and care-oriented doctors. And I just don't think you could really perform resuscitation at the level it should be performed if you're retaining a stance of people orientation. Now, let me explain this because it might, like I say, I'm selling myself down the river. But optimization of care is what our patients want during resuscitation. They might like as a bonus the compassion, and that's there. But if you had to pick one or the other, then clearly the care is what matters because they are in a life and death scenario. And optimizing the care, in my mind, in some ways means taking away the personhood and converting the person in front of you into a patient, because we have to do a whole bunch of things that rob a person of their dignity in order to do resuscitation. And if they retain their personhood, then that dignity stealing is unacceptable. It's a barrier that you can't cross. So we, in resuscitation, have to convert a person to a patient to provide optimal care. And that conversion allows us that distance to actually be able to do the things we need to do. It's why I can't treat pediatrics. I am not capable of stealing the fact that they're people. It was even before I had a kid, but now that I have a kid, I can't see them as patients. They retain that personhood. And as a result, it becomes incredibly difficult for me to treat them. And I've made my practice specifically not to treat pediatrics. Now, when does the patient in my unit go back to being clearly a person and not a patient? Well, it's during palliative care. Because now, you know, I've been told for a long time, how do you talk about a palliative care discussion? And that's a huge portion of my practice in ED critical care, is having these discussions in a really much more tense circumstance. I don't have 4 days to do gradual family discussions and get them there. A lot of times we have to have a very short conversations that are of immense importance. And you might say things like, we're going to optimize comfort. That always seemed like bullshit to me, because I could keep a patient comfortable. I have enough meds at my disposal. But you know what we lose, Andrew? You know what we have to choose between for aggressive curative versus palliative care is dignity, right? So that for me, when I talk about palliative care, it's like, do we optimize dignity over everything, or do we sacrifice dignity and make them a patient in order to optimize cure or aggressive care? And that dividing line between people and patients, to my mind, is dignity. And so I hear them about, and obviously, if you're going down the path of trying everything possible to cure, you retain whatever dignity you humanly can. I'm holding hands, I'm all over that. But there's this transition in my head that allows me the distance to actually do the things we need to do. Otherwise, if you really think about the things we do, they're horrible. I mean, even something so simple as a Foley catheter, it's an immense stealing of dignity to our patients. Why could we do that? Because whether people are willing to admit it or not, we've made a transition in our head. If we give them back their personhood, then we can't do the things we do. And that's what palliative care is all about, is I'm going to retain you as a person over the horrible things we would do ordinarily if we were seeking cure.
I don't quite understand what the mental switch is, though. Just explain that again. Yeah. So I'm seeing the person there, and I've got to resuscitate them. What do I do in my brain?
I think, I could be completely wrong, but I think what most of us do in resuscitation is we make them into patients. And if you really were mindful, and I try to be mindful of this transition, they kind of disappear as a person and they become a patient. Yes, you're still seeing their characteristics. You're still seeing who they are. But at some level, a switch is clicked because the things we do are inhuman. They're not things that you would do to someone who wasn't in that circumstance. And so whether and this is only my opinion, I could just be aggrandizing a very perverted view in an attempt to justify it to myself, but I think all of us flick that switch during resuscitation. And at some level, they become patients. They become a separate form than their unique personhood that allows us to do these inhuman things. And it might happen unconsciously. I think I'm just very conscious of that transition.
Can I interrupt? Is it the labels like bed 4 in cardiac arrest?
No, that's garbage. That's the bad side of that. And don't go there. No, what's happening, I think, on an unconscious level, or you can make it conscious, is we have to make a transition in our head that allows us to invade the patient's personal space, to do things that are painful, and we will make them we'll avoid pain at all costs. But the point is, we are still doing things that I think a mental switch has been flicked that rob a little bit of their nature as a unique person with a space around them that should be inviolate and not be. We are violating personhood of the people during resuscitation because it's a necessary step. And that distance, if not there, I think you would be destroyed within a year of practice if you don't have that mental distance. Now, when I was in the intensive care unit, they get back their personhood. Their personhood is filled in by their families and their loved ones that are there. And that's there. But during the resuscitative phase, if you're really glomming onto that, then that is the wrong mental space to be in, I think. And of course, you know, I get plenty of patients coming to my unit. They're not that sick. And then they're fully people. That's what matters. And you know, I hate this term, but it's pervasive in the United States of they're not your patients, they're your customers. Mm. Well, they're right. The patients who come into my unit, they're not that sick. They are customers. I have to, you know, you talk to them, you treat them like people. But when I have someone who's deathly ill, A, they're not customers anymore. They're patients. And they need to be thought about that. And, you know, yes, mentally you might not make that transition, but it's a very different mode of care in those two circumstances.
So I think I'm getting it now. As I continue to resuscitate the patient and see them as a patient, I'm got a different mind focus. Then when I walk out and I say, I'm just going to go and meet with his wife and tell her that, you know, he's not doing so well, I would go back to the person then, wouldn't I?
You would. And you're also seeing the family as people. And that's the hard thing. That's where I lose it. That's where, you know, I'm left with, you know, emotional baggage that has to be processed. I'm pretty good, on the sickest of patients. I'm not left with, you know, we all in intensive care and emergency medicine have seen horrible, horrible things. That doesn't stick with me. But when I see, you know, the newlywed wife of a 21-year-old who's now a quadriplegic and she breaks down, that destroys me. And that's why I don't understand people who say that they could do this resuscitation and still retain this absolute vision of the person they're treating as a person, because I would be breaking down and crying during the resuscitation itself. That distance is the only thing that allows us to do the things we do.
No, I get it now. And look, you've explained you find it hard to treat children, and you know patients like that are going to be difficult. What? How do you deal with that component?
I don't.
Compassion fatigue. You know, we get it.
Because if you are letting that side of you play out into every resuscitation. And I know there are people that do that because those are the people who are people-oriented instead of care-oriented. I don't think they have longevity in the pure resuscitative fields. They absolutely could have a long career in intensive care because the resuscitations don't happen that often. And most of the time, the patients have become people. But I don't think you could live a long time in a resuscitative field if that compassion is leaking over to your minute-by-minute care. Now, every so often, you're going to have someone whose personhood transcends that mental distance, and then you're hit a little bit. But if that's happening with every sick patient you treat, you're hosed. This is not going to be the career for you, because you will, and God, these terms are all loaded, but you'll burn out so quickly. When I trained at the Shock Trauma Center, they never verbalized this, but they were all care-oriented physicians. And I think they were the best intensivists I'd ever seen in a surgical realm. And it's because all they cared about, more than anything else, and I'm sure it's built the mental models I have of this stuff, is, are we providing the most excellent care that is possible in our current system? And if we're not, let's figure out a way to fix it, and let's not let any barriers get in that way. That was what they cared about more than anything else, is, are we providing the best possible care? And if you let all this other stuff come in, then that's at the expense of it sometimes. Now, where does the compassion come from? Who is still seeing our patients as people? Well, that is where the intensive care nurse or the ED critical care nurse, that's aside from all their other clinical roles, they should still see these patients as people. If they're seeing them with that distance and loss of personhood, then you're in trouble, because someone needs to retain that. Someone needs to remind you of the fact that these are people. And that's always been what I've looked at as the most potent thing a critical care nurse could provide.
Gosh, I'd love to hear what you think about all this. I'm sure there's going to be some people that listen to this and just say, wow, he's a bastard. He doesn't get it. I'm not sure if those people are honestly looking at their resuscitative practice, because again, I can't be more clear about this. This is a small subset of the patients you're going to see in emergency medicine in general, and it's even a relatively small subset of the patients I see in ED critical care. Most of my patients are not crashing in front of me and absolutely retain their personhood throughout their entire clinical encounter. And most patients you do resuscitate at some point stabilize, and they get to the critical care unit and they're absolutely, you know, personhood is their number one thing you should be maximizing, because the care is in no way, that personhood does not interfere with the care and intensive care at a stabilized level in any way. But during actual resuscitation, I think there's only three people. There's the people that are person or people oriented and are continuing that stance, that mental stance throughout their resuscitation. Those people I don't think have any longevity. I don't think they're very effective comparatively to the care-oriented doctors during resuscitation. Then there are the people who are making the transition, you know, flicking the switch, but have no awareness of it. And they might still disagree, but they're just not being honest with themselves. And then there are the people like me who have spent a lot of time really looking at their mind in these circumstances and realizing that that switch is being flicked through no act of their own. This is the key. And I, you know, Andrew asked a very good question. He was confused, like, what is the actual thing you're doing inside your head to flick this switch? And I ignored the question. I didn't get it at the time. Now listening back, I hear his question and I realize that I didn't answer it. But the answer is that you're not doing anything consciously. You're not flicking the switch and saying, I am now turning off this person's, you know, personhood and now deeming them a patient by, like, you know, turning this Dr. Frankenstein level knob inside your head. It's happening. And I think the only question is whether you're conscious of it happening or not, whether you spent enough time looking at your own mental state to realize that it has happened, but that's being flicked without your intervention. And if you can't flick it, or you're unwilling to flick it, or you actively prevent the flicking, then I just don't think you're a very good resus doc. And I'm sure people are going to write in and tell me, no, you're wrong. I maintain full visage of this person as a person and not as a patient, and yet I provide amazing level resuscitative care. For all I know, you may be right. It's just, I haven't witnessed it. And when I look at the best resus doctors I've ever seen, I know I could say with 99% assurance that they flicked that switch. And that, I don't know if they're consciously aware of it or not, but I'm pretty sure that's what's happened. And if you ask them, I think most of them would say, oh no, I'm still, you know, 100% geared up towards optimizing all of the things that come with dignity retention. And I think they'd be lying, because as I stated, and I can't be more clear about this, you do the best care, and then with that as your primary goal, and then your secondary goal is to preserve every shred of dignity possible that doesn't interfere with that care. But if you're not admitting to yourself that good care comes from making that secondary, then I don't necessarily want you resuscitating me because I think you have the wrong goal in mind. I want to live if I have gone down a curative path, and then give me every bit of dignity I could still get with that primary goal in the front of your head. All right, I think I'll leave it there. I'd love to hear what you thought. Please put it in the comments. People have been sending me lately feedback from the episodes as opposed to putting them on the actual show notes for the episode, and that doesn't make sense because then I see them, but no one else sees them, and we can't get cross-pollination and group discussion. So please, go to mcrit.org/252, post your comments, tell me if I'm an asshole, tell me what you think, and until then, this has been Scott Weingart for the MCrit podcast saying bye-bye. Go listen to Mastering Intensive Care. It's really, really good.